Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Sean Coakley, who is Senior Vice President at Kenco Logistics. And today we're going to talk about the keys to developing successful 3PL customer relationships. Now, this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. It's an area that I've certainly done a lot of research in over the years. And it's an area that you continue to see a lot of great research being done in terms of really exploring what are those key factors that really drive, long-term successful relationships. And, just recently, there was a great research paper published by the University of Tennessee, which, Kenco sponsored, and that revealed some additional great insights on this topic. And, Sean is going to, share some of that insight today from that research, as well as from an experience working in the industry. So very fortunate to have him on the program today. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question for Sean as we're having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button or via the chat feature. And I'll keep an eye on it. And if it's a good and appropriate question, I'll try to weave it into the conversation. Just a reminder that if you are joining us as a visitor, you do have to sign in first to Spreecast before you can ask a question. So with that, Sean, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Adrian. Appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity.
So, Sean, first-time guest here at Talking Logistics. I always, whenever I bring someone new on board, I just like to get a little bit of an understanding of, how and why they got involved with, the supply chain logistics industry. So, why don't we start there before we kind of dive into the meat of the program here and tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved with supply chain logistics and what your current role and responsibilities are there at Kenco.
Sure, certainly. Well, hopefully I can avoid being your first massive blunder here on the video. But so my background, like a lot of us in logistics, sort of stumbled into the field after graduating from Michigan State. I went into consulting, primarily around international trade and development, where I slowly leaked into some of the more tactical sides of logistics. And after doing that for a few years, got a chance to go to the shipper side for a technology company, like many of us who got caught up in the technology boom of the late 90s, got excited about rolling out some new technologies and did that activity for a few years until that bubble burst. And then at that point said, I really enjoyed the service side. I enjoyed the benefit of being able to see a lot of different solutions with a lot of different industries. So I went back to the service industry and actually got my first taste of 3PLs, to which now I'm 15 years into that solution and enjoying it every day. So I've worked my way through operations, through design, and now reside within the sales function within Kenco, as you said, as Senior Vice President.
Great background there. And, what's interesting, I know we're going to, talk about this a little bit, is that, the merging of, the kind of the services side in the 3PL industry with technology, right? Technology really playing a core part here. So interesting kind of having that background and that being part of your career path here. So let's talk now about, the 3PL industry. I mean, certainly there's been a lot of change in the industry over the past few years, especially even last year with all those, mergers and acquisitions that took place. So I guess, to start off with, I mean, how would, since you're in the front lines of this, I mean, how would you characterize the state of the 3PL industry today?
Well, I would say the best phrase for it is in transition. Right. So certainly the last 5 years of our industry have seen the most change that I've seen in my tenure, whether it's been on the service provider side with the M&A activity, but also heavily with customer needs and requirements. So just the way what customers are looking for coming out of the recession in the mid 2000s, their expectations, the adjustment in their needs of services as it relates to meeting their customer demand. And then, of course, the evolution of, as you mentioned earlier, technology and its impact. I used to always say this was an operational blue-collar industry, and, it still is that, but certainly has evolved over the last few years to be significantly influenced from the knowledge capital services like technology and engineering services.
So, I mean, when you look at, you know, all the changes that have taken place, you know, and you gave some examples there, I mean, what do you think has changed the most over the past decade, and what has, despite all the change, not changed at all?
Well, probably the most is customer requirements, the customers themselves, frankly. So, especially from a sales perspective, where you used to look at, all right, the Fortune 500 companies, you could profile what an optimal customer looked like. You could align it to what your preferred services as a service provider were, you know, relatively easily identify where the best opportunities were. These days, customers have evolved so much, whether it's through their own M&A activities. You know, you may have a contract one day with one company, and then 3 years it may be two companies further on. So, I mean, so a lot of the M&A and CPG, a lot of the customer needs as it relates to some looking more for a transactional service, others looking for a more partnership, knowledge capital-based solution. That's been the biggest change in the last 5 years, certainly. Probably the thing that's changed the least is customers' search for cost savings. I mean, it's no secret that that people come to 3PLs in good times and in bad times looking for efficiencies and ways to make their operations more cost effective, and I don't see that changing in the near future.
Yeah, no, very interesting. You know, and I know we're going to get to that, you know, knowledge base capability, because I see that as a big, you know, change in the industry as well. We just got a question here from Joe Lombardo, which I think kind of that will be a good time to ask, since we're probably going to go in different directions later. You know, in terms of a change, I'm going to just put it up on the screen here. And do you see more 3PLs going to an asset light strategy rather than remaining non-asset?
So I think there's a big "it depends" on answer there. So from a transportation perspective, there was certainly a large move to asset light business models over the last 2 years, primarily due to the success of companies such as Coyote, Access America, C.H. Robinson, seeing the investment opportunity and the fast growth opportunities in an asset-light transportation brokerage solution. At the same time, a lot of the asset providers saw a tightening, as you saw a tightening last year in capacity. There were others who moved further to the asset side, understanding that those who own the assets in the end will own the customer. Now, as capacity has loosened up a bit over the last few months, I would say there's a little more equilibrium in the market. On the warehousing side, it's still a quote-unquote asset-heavy solution. There are new solutions out there where companies are just leveraging a marketplace of other service providers. But it's still primarily those folks with multi-client operations in key geographies, or those companies that can go out and obtain certain warehousing space, that tend to dominate the market.
Great. Joe, thanks for the great question. You kind of touched upon this a little bit in terms of, you know, cost savings or looking for cost reductions, not you kind of being something that's kind of remained the same over the years. So, I mean, is cost savings and service improvement still kind of the main reasons why companies outsource their logistics operations, or are there other kind of driving factors right now?
Yeah, I would say it's a more complicated answer these days. Certainly cost savings and looking for improvement in service will continue to be key benefits, but flexibility has become incredibly important to the selection process. And flexibility can mean a lot of things for customers. It can mean sometimes you get large customers who have had traditional footprints, warehousing footprints in locations near manufacturing location or manufacturing plants, who now recognize they need to be closer to their customer base as opposed to closer to their manufacturing location. So they're looking for flexibility in the market to get closer to their customers. Flexibility could mean They want to be able to swap in, swap out providers, whether it's transportation or warehousing, on a more frequent basis based upon technology, available technologies, based upon movements in their customer base. So I would say flexibility has added to that service and price consideration within the last probably 4 years as a major decision factor.
You know, kind of just to echo that a little bit, I mean, certainly when I talk to companies, you know, one of the things that I see that kind of impacts them is that they need to respond much more quickly to their own customer requirements and demands, right? So the environment's becoming so much more dynamic. And when they look at, well, how long is it going to take me? What's it going to cost? What's it going to take for me to put in the processes, the systems, the technology to try to become much more dynamic and flexible and responsive versus, you know, going to a service provider who may already have, you know, what I need in place or can, you know, ramp it up more quickly than I can, kind of move in that direction. Of course, then that puts the challenge on ramping up and bringing something live and operation live quickly on you as a third party provider. Do you see that as well?
Absolutely. Now, sometimes that cloak of flexibility could really be hiding more of a strategy of transferring of risk. So, as you said, whether it's transferring the risk of technology, you know, access to the latest and greatest technology and wanting to be able to swap that out over time, or it's transferring risk of labor or assets that may have been on their customers' books previously and they now want to put onto a service provider's book. So, you know, flexibility, as I said, can mean a lot of different things. But today, that is certainly the watchword in the industry.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, I mean, I think we can probably talk at length about, you know, risk transfer and you know, certainly that's something that I've written about and talked about and others as well in terms of, you know, the challenges in doing that and how shippers and 3PLs can work, you know, more collaboratively in terms of understanding what is acceptable risk, right? And let's talk about the paper now that I referenced in my opening remarks. Again, it was published by the University of Tennessee. Kate Vitasek and Paul Dittman were the kind of the authors. Kenko helped sponsor the project, and you know, I wrote about it on the blog and on Talking Logistics, and it's been our most popular blog post this year. So it really garnered a lot of attention. To start off with, was there a particular research finding that surprised you the most?
You know, I would say not really. Obviously, as being involved in the research process, we saw some of the results as they went along. But, you know, a lot of these factors that they memorialized in the paper are items that the community has been discussing for a few years. And I think it's just taken this amount of time to truly put it on paper and truly define it as best practices. So I think that's one of the greatest benefits of this paper is it does truly state clearly, concisely what those best practices look like and what are some of those lessons learned for both the shipper and the service provider.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think in my blog post, I said, you know, it's kind of recommended reading for anyone that's in the beginning stages or, you know, has never outsourced before, and even those that are already in existing partnerships or relationships to really take a look at and see, you know, how they map compared to, you know, those best practices. So let's talk about them. You know, let's start first with kind of the selection process. I mean, what were some of the leading practices revealed by the research in terms of going about to select an appropriate 3PL partner?
Yeah, so one of the big ones that they stressed in the paper was really an honest assessment from, if you're a shipper, an open assessment of your current capabilities and then clear definition of your needs. You know, it was a little surprising that several of the executives from shippers that they interviewed said that they felt once they actually outsourced that perhaps they had not completed a true, honest, complete assessment of their needs prior to the outsourcing activity. So, I mean, by far most critical, because if you haven't been honest with yourself, it's hard to be honest with the service provider and for us to truly be able to articulate a solution that is going to benefit the shipper in the long run. Another one I always like to talk about is clean and accurate data. So they talked about the information that is provided to a service provider during the RFP process. Sometimes shippers may be embarrassed or may not want to provide some of the dirty laundry that exists within their logistics network. But of course, if you only provide the best, the cleanest, the most optimal looking information, then that's all a service provider can craft a solution based upon. And obviously is not going to be real life when implementation occurs. So just in general, the phrase I like to talk to customers about is the old IT adage of garbage in, garbage out, right? So if the information that a service provider has provided is lacking in any way, unfortunately, service providers are not mind readers, and that means the solution that you get back will likely be lacking in one way or another.
Yeah, those are all great points. And I mean, do you find that, I mean, with the kind of the prospects that you work with, do you see a healthy balance between, okay, here's where what we need today versus here's where we want to go and kind of providing some future direction? Or is it mostly, hey, you know, this is what we need today. And I think in the worst case, it's probably, hey, we want you to do exactly what we're doing in-house today and just do it, you know, with your labor, right? And with your facilities. Whereas I think as a service provider, ideally it would be, okay, here's our desired outcomes and here's where we want to be in 5 years. How can you help us get there? Where are we today in terms of the types of conversations you see happening with prospects?
Yeah, what I see is, so typically when shippers go to the market looking for 3PL services, it's traditionally, or it's typically for a discrete activity. So as you said, this is what we're doing today, or maybe we're moving a facility, or we've moved a facility and we have a new network of transportation, but you know, we want you to propose a solution based upon this discrete activity. And one of the activities or one of the solutions that came through in the paper and is something we talk to our customers a lot about is when you're choosing a new provider, you know, obviously you want to choose the best solution for that discrete activity, but look out past that because in reality, the long-term relationship is when you're going to be having those more strategic conversations and saying, you know, after we get through the implementation of that discrete activity, what is it you want to do next? And can that service provider support those future initiatives? So when you're making a decision, it's okay to make a decision on a discrete activity. That's how it generally occurs, but make it based upon a provider who can help you in the long run to do the more strategic activities that where you see your company growing into and helping you support that transformation.
Yeah, no, I agree. And certainly the relationships that I've seen that have been the most productive and most successful have been those that, you know, right from the beginning have really taken that, not only the near-term requirements, but also look ahead towards future requirements. You know, I always like to quote Yogi Berra, you know, if you don't know where you're going, you might not get there type of thing, right? So I think that's critically important when kind of formulating a relationship here. So as a service provider, I mean, are there any red flags when you're kind of engaging with a prospective client that will make you think twice or say, you know what, this is probably not a good opportunity for us?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Any good sales organization does opportunity qualification. And, you know, with the steady growth in the 3PL industry, you know, any strong 3PL with a strong reputation is qualifying deals these days. So, I mean, it's relatively obvious at times for 3PLs when customers are going to the market with just looking for benchmarking or pricing activities as opposed to truly looking for strategic partnerships. So as a 3PL, you have to look at you know, is there an opportunity here to develop a long-term relationship with this customer, or is this just simply a way to beat down their existing service providers or someone who's just purely buying on price? Lack of existing relationships with customers who are bidding out opportunities, or lack of ability to interact with operational executives and senior management at the company is generally a red flag with us. It's not unusual for us to get a RFP that's been thrown out by a consultant and told we won't be allowed to talk to the customer, the actual shipper, until someone, a particular provider, has been selected. At those times, you get really selective, I guess, on what ones you decide to pursue and whether you really think there's a long-term opportunity and partnership involved here. You also have to do the risk-reward analysis. Going back to the transfer of risk conversation we had earlier, you know, it's not that unusual today for customers to put out terms and conditions, qualifications like, you have to sign this document with no edits or considerations, and typically it'll be a product typed terms and conditions as opposed to a service-based terms and conditions document. Or say, you know, you have to take on all risk for liability for a particular operation, and when you do the math, you know, here at Kenco, our average customer length is over 17 years. So we look, when we bid on a piece of business, at a long-term investment and a long-term relationship. But if one little hiccup in the operation causes 20 years of profits to go out the window, that's an easy decision to say we're going to pass on that opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I think that the scary thing is, you know, that last example you gave is something that more and more service providers are facing. I can't tell you how many 3PLs I've talked to over the past 2 or 3 years where they've been presented with such clauses that they, when they look at the liability, it says, you know, we'll put ourselves out of business, you know, if that were to emerge, which is just just unreasonable. So let's talk now about, you know, so there's a selection piece, obviously, but let's talk now about the managing the relationship. So now you've got the relationship in place. I mean, what are some of the processes or the best practices that came out of the research in terms of, you know, managing a relationship to make it truly a win-win type of situation?
Yes. Yeah, so there were a few results that came out that were important. First of all, transparency between the two parties is critical, right? So again, making sure you're airing your dirty laundry, you're giving the true definition and picture of what the existing situation looks like, both pros and cons, and having both partners talk about what things can truly be addressed immediately and what are more long-term solutions. So on the shipper side, it's airing all of that actual information and actual operating data. On the service provider side, it's being open and honest and transparent with costs, with implementation timing. It does no one any good if you say, you know, I can do everything in 8 weeks and for the lowest cost. And then when you get into contract negotiations, of course, there are some providers who are known for the whole bait and switch. So that's something we as service providers always fight against. And I think the industry has done a fantastic job of pushing out that mentality and really getting down to the true operational data and trying to contract and price based upon those activities. A well-defined governance structure is critical to those long-term relationships. So the paper came back with some interesting information on there's the good and the bad of on-site representation from a customer in a warehouse or in a transportation management center versus off-site. There is such a thing as too little interaction or too little oversight from a customer, and there's such a thing as too much oversight from a customer. So it's really working together to find that equilibrium that allows that transparency, allows open communication between the companies, but also has a shipper relying on the expertise, allows the 3PL to bring their expertise to bear and run the operation the way they know best, leveraging their best practices. That's how the best values is created for both parties.
No, I completely agree, and certainly a lot of what you brought up is things that I hear as well, and it's come out of, you know, my research as well. You brought up a point here that Joe asked a question. I think that's a little bit related here, so I'm going to go ahead and put it up on the screen. And the question is, do you see any trends with customers wanting 3PL associates to be on site at their offices, DC plants, et cetera? Technology improvements should make this less necessary. So what do you think on that? What are you seeing there?
I wouldn't say I have seen a trend in one way or the other. There have been, and there will continue to be a lot of customers who want to be able to reach out and touch that service provider, so do require some sort of customer relationship manager on site, especially when you're talking about control tower scenarios and wanting to have or needing immediate information and wanting to have those people involved in strategic planning conversations. It's certainly not a bad thing. Like I said, on-site representation tends to lead to better communication, more transparency, and an easier flow of information. But I wouldn't say there's a definitive trend. On the warehousing side, again, it's a bit of 50-50 for us. Some customers want a representative in the building. Where you tend to have problems is when you have essentially two general managers working within the building, and customer or employees, associates, are not sure who exactly they're taking their direction from. So if you are going to have on-site representation from the customer at a warehouse, for instance, then you want to make it really clear what is their role and where are the limitations between their direction to the on-floor associates versus the service provider's general manager.
Great point, Joe. Thank you for the question. One of the things I know in my research that came up kind of has always come up high in terms of what's important in terms of managing a successful relationship is the recognition that at the end of the day, this is a people business. And in a lot of cases, it's that relationship between the account manager at the 3PL and the main point person at the customer, the way they can communicate and interact with each other. And in a lot of cases, what a lot of what I've heard from 3PLs is that they put people in those positions that it's not necessarily someone that goes deep in transportation knowledge or goes deep in warehousing knowledge. But it's people that have, those, what I would say, those soft skills in terms of relationship management skills, that can ask effective questions, are good listeners, and know how to, deal with tough situations or tough conversations when problems arise, so on and so forth. Do you see that as well in terms of that, the relationship between the people as being a critical factor?
Absolutely. Those employees are invaluable employees simply for that skill. It is a difficult skill to find, truly somebody who can interact with all levels of a customer's organization, knows what questions to ask, and knows how, more importantly, how to relay concerns or operational requirements back to the service provider's functional areas and subject matter experts and really be that go-between. So that is a critical function these days. It's probably why when you find those people, those are the people you see get promoted most frequently and actually reside in the most executive levels of 3PLs today.
Great input. We're kind of coming up short on time here. I've got a couple of more questions, but I just want to remind those of you that if you do want to ask a question, now would be kind of the time to submit it. So let's talk about technology now, and I'll frame it within one of my predictions for 2016, and which was that the 3PL value proposition is going to get flipped, where instead of logistics services enabled by technology, it's becoming outsourced IT and business intelligence powered or enabled by logistics. I mean, do you agree with my prediction? And what is the role of how is the role of technology changing within the 3PL industry?
So in the long run, I agree with that assessment. I think that we still have a little ways to go. It is definitely evolving, as we said earlier, into a more technology-centered solution and service. That said, there are still a lot of customers out there that view logistics as a very tactical activity, and a lot of those customers will have that mindset for a very long time, I'm sure. And so those folks, honestly, it's a bit of a perception problem the 3PL industry has going back for decades, right, of just being seen as tactical operators as opposed to strategic partners. That evolution has occurred during the 2000s. It's certainly picked up pace coming out of the recession as we all have become more adept at discussing technology solutions, discussing engineering capabilities, things of that nature. But we still have a ways to go with that. Now, there are a subset, and which is growing every day, of customers who do look at their 3PL from a strategic knowledge capital perspective, and they do want you to be that consultant as much as you are that tactical operator. So but those are the ones who tend to understand the whole dynamic of partnership versus a discrete activity a little better. They're the ones who have encouraged a more free flow of information and communication. They're the ones who bring you into their strategic planning processes and give you that future view of the evolution of their business model so that you can help them design that their future supply chain. But I'd say we still have a ways to go until that is the predominant model in the industry.
Right, right. I think I would agree with you there. I don't think it's going to happen. It's going to get flipped that quickly in just one year. But certainly directionally, I think that's the way I see it. And part of the reason is that, you know, I think when I talk to a lot of shippers, and particularly in the supply chain and in the logistics space, right, transportation warehousing, you know, they're getting pressure for, you know, providing more technology, for providing visibility, you know, perhaps putting in a TMS or a WMS. And the reality that they face is that, you know, they still are at the bottom of the priority list when it comes to IT resources and when it comes to funding. You know, their IT team is still in the, you know, year three of a 7-year ERP global rollout, right? And so what they're doing, and, you know, what I see is they're looking into 3PLs and say, hey, Mr. 3PL partner, we need these types of technology capabilities, this type of visibility. We need it within 6 months. Can you help us, right? So that's how part of the reason that kind of formulated that prediction was kind of them looking at their 3PL partners as a faster path to getting those technology capabilities than doing it themselves internally, even if they're managing their operations currently internally. Your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, we have evolved into the logistics IT department for more of our customers in the last 5 years than the 65 years previously. So, you know, we have evolved to have actual IT experts who are our employees residing in customer operations solely for that purpose, because they cannot get access to their own IT resources. So therefore, they're leveraging our expertise to help them not just build integrations with the execution tools, but also to build brand new applications for customers. For instance, we've built apps for their sales teams that directly link into the logistics executions tools to provide further capabilities for their sales teams. Again, having little to do directly with logistics, but it's provides that added value within their company. And again, they just haven't been able to get that access from their IT or that focus from their own IT organization. So absolutely see it continuing to grow as we move forward and steadily over the next few years.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think the 3PL industry, I think you alluded to this before, kind of gets a bad rap in terms of being low on the IT maturity curve. But in reality, when you look at some of the things you're doing and others, in some cases, 3PLs have more IT resources and developers than many software companies do themselves. So I think it's a myth that goes on, but it doesn't really reflect reality today. Sean, we're kind of short on time here. So I'm going to go straight to my last question here, kind of as a way to wrap up. I mean, if you had to, boil it down to a single, statement or phrase, I mean, how would you complete the following, sentence? So the most important factor in creating a successful and, you know, and maintaining a successful 3PL customer relationship is what?
I would say honest and consistent two-way communication. So obviously good information is critical to the relationship. Understanding, having both parties having an ongoing and consistent dialogue around what's going well, what's not going well, what are changes in the business. And when you have that level of when you have a level of trust, a level of partnership between the two companies, where you're not afraid to air your dirty laundry, to discuss challenges in the operations, whether it's within the shipper's operation or within the service provider's operation that they're running, then you're able to address issues much faster. You're able to focus on strategic planning for the future. So that honest and direct two-way communication is critical to long-term relationships.
I would agree 100%. You know, I think for a lot of these things, particularly any kind of business relationship, it always comes down to communication and honest communication, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to help to, build trust. Sean, like I always say at the end of all our episodes, you know, we always manage to just scratch the surface on these topics, but I certainly appreciate you, making the time today and getting the conversation started. And again, thank you very much for making the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
I want to thank all of you that joined us live today, and thank you for your questions. Certainly, if you want to download the paper, we've got the link over at Talking Logistics. I'm sure you can also find the paper at the Kenco website. But if you are watching this episode on demand and you've got a question for Sean, you can post a question or comment there, and find the episode on talkinglogistics.com, and I'm sure Sean would be more than happy to respond via that medium. So with that, thank you all, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.